Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome in to the Bet the Board podcast powered by betonline.ag. The preseason officially in our rearview mirrors. We shift our attention to games that actually mean something on the NFL docket. I am, of course, your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by a man who may be a little bit somber after what he saw transpire on the gridiron last night in Tallahassee, the one, the only Payne Insider.
Ooh, it was ugly. It was ugly last night. By the way, you got a little pep in your step. Were you adult beverage free yesterday on Labor Day?
You know what? I had a few cocktails, but I had more festivities over at my house on Sunday. So I had some friends over, a couple family members that I won't see again until Thanksgiving. Knowing the grind that we embark on in early September, watch the NASCAR, watch Miami embarrass themselves. So yesterday was more a rest and recovery day and trying to comprehend everything we saw on the college slate. And more importantly, you know, preparing for all the big NFL action coming up this weekend.
You're juiced. I can hear it in your voice.
I mean, you tell me I got to bring the A game sometimes. Throughout the course of our 17-week grind, you're going to carry me through episodes. I worried about where you were going to be mentally after Florida State and the Willie Taggart debut, so I felt I had to try and find that extra pep this morning.
Well, I appreciate that. So, thank you. What a team player.
You know what? I do what I can. It's not much, Payne, but I do what I can. And when we look at the NFL, wanted to get kind of your initial thoughts, maybe more conceptually than some of the games, and we'll, of course, get to the marquee matchups. What's kind of your approach for handicapping early season NFL football and not overvaluing some of the preseason results?
Yeah, I don't really value much of the preseason. Certainly, you can take away some depth. I think that's a positive. You can see which teams have depth because this is a sport of attrition, so depth is key there. Obviously, you like to look at the rehearsal game. You don't take too much from it, but you'd like to at least see rhythm, some form, especially with teams that are implementing new systems, new coordinators. You know, just a team off the top of my head, we expect at least a little better showing from an offense like Tennessee, but the form and the rhythm looked a little off. So potentially early on in the season, you're downgrading them just a little bit so you can get acclimated to a new system. So things like that, I think that you take from it. But as the preseason seems to get devalued, more guys are sitting out. There's just not too much you need to be taking from it.
Yeah, it ends up being not even quite dress rehearsals like we've seen in the past, watching some of those guys out there. And I guess, you know, we talked at great lengths, Payne, in terms of college football numbers in week one not offering nearly as much value because the numbers have been up so long and beat up. We'll, of course, get Dave Mason's take on that, knowing BetOnline.ag hung a lot of these point spreads way back in April. But do you have a similar mindset for the NFL, or is it a little bit different knowing that these point spreads aren't nearly as volatile as college football totals that can move upwards of 10 to 15 points before we ever see a game kick off for real?
Not as volatile, correct, but I still think you don't want to be entering the market at a value hindrance, so to speak. Like, you know, there was probably a game, and I'm not going to tease it like too much. I don't want to spoil it, but like Atlanta, Philadelphia, for instance, probably would have been a game that we gave out on this podcast as a best bet. But when you go through that three and a half to 2.5, you're looking at about 6.5% right there of your edge gone just in that move right there. So significant movement there. And I just don't want to be plowing through numbers early on in the season, especially when we think about it this way. Like there's just so many opportunities, 17 weeks, playoffs, you know, 14 to 16 games a week. Like there's just ample opportunity. It doesn't make sense to enter the market when your edge is pretty much gone at that point. And I think a lot of people will just look at the core numbers and will again use that game as an example, like, oh, you know, you expect them to win by three, but not four. You know, when you're looking at this, doing this long term and 55% your gold standard, suddenly you take a 6.5% edge out of the market. What do you have? What are you left with? You know, you are a losing bettor at that point. So things like that, certainly to be mindful of.
It is definitely a much different mentality and one that we try and impart a little bit as we go for some of our listeners that may not be as proficient in some of the gambling parlance and indoctrinated to the way we do things around Bet the Board, but we also have some ways to try and welcome our family in pain, and you are the mastermind behind a lot of the creative things we do when it comes to the contest, the promotions, and everything else. So lay it all out for some of our fine listeners, what they can expect from us all fall long.
Well, we still have the contest going on. Bettheboard.footballcontest.com. Sign up. It is mirroring what the Super Contest is. It's absolutely free to join. You pick five NFL games against the spread each week. We are going to be putting out a massive prize pool, $5,000, and it usually grows just a little bit. There are weekly prizes, Visa gift cards, Bet the Board gear for a winner each and every single week. So it keeps you in the game. You know, you join a lot of these contests and, you know, after you're out or you start poorly the first 3-4 weeks, you end up not submitting your picks. Well, there's a reason to submit picks every single week. There's Visa gift cards. And again, Bet the Board swag to a winner each and every single week. So this is the largest online contest that is free. Last year we had over 2,200 entries. I believe 1,500 was the winner took home last year. So there's no reason not to join. Bettheboard.footballcontest.com, and you can sign up leading up right to kickoff. And that's the other interesting part about our contest is you don't need to submit your picks all at once. You can stagger them throughout the course of the week. If you want to play the Thursday night game every week, that's fine too. You don't have to submit your other four picks until the weekend. So I think a lot of advantages to join our contest.
Yeah, let's hope. I mean, numbers, get out there, people, sign up, tell your friends, tell your families. Competition is always fun, and the price, you can't beat the price point. Absolutely free, no risk involved. Encourage you to try and get in there and test your hand to be able to make a few bucks for all of that NFL acumen you've acquired over the years. As in pain, I feel like it's time we may as well jump into some of the biggest games on the docket this weekend, unless you had any other tidbits and words of wisdom you wanted to try and share with our listeners.
No, let's be efficient. Let's get to the games.
All right, let's get right after it, and we'll start with a game that adds a little bit of intrigue, given the fact that Cleveland finished last year 0-16. They were prominently featured on Hard Knocks this offseason, and naturally, we've seen major line movement in Cleveland's direction. At betonline.ag, we've seen the Steelers go from 6.5-point favorites on the open, that number down to 4.5, even some 3.5s out there in the market, and the total paying 47-45.5. I don't know where to start on this. We can start with Le'Veon Bell. We can start with Cleveland and Hard Knocks. The floor is yours. I want you to try and make the most compelling case to explain some of this line move.
Well, and you're just talking about the line move in general. We saw this exact game last year, right? It was week one. It was in Cleveland. There was no Le'Veon Bell. The game closed 10. And so when you look at 3.5, certainly they are much improved. There's no doubt about that. Certainly there's the aspect of Hard Knocks becoming a little bit more public of a team. And I think that all plays a role. I'm not sure they're this much better, but we'll certainly see. And, you know, you mentioned Le'Veon Bell. That's the interesting part of this recent movement, because just yesterday you were looking at 5.5, 6 as the number. And now without Le'Veon Bell, we're now at 3.5, and I get there is value to him in his game, but specifically when we were looking at this side, why I liked it, and I was hoping for Le'Veon Bell to play because it would have kept the market at 6. There would have been potential here to get above that key number of 3 in the first half. I wasn't going to value Le'Veon Bell that highly in week one. We saw this last year. He sat out. He was out all of camp. He wasn't in football shape. He would have been learning a new system. Last year, the first two games, it took him time to get going. He only had 3.1 yards per touch. Last 14 games, over 5 yards per touch. So the Le'Veon Bell we were going to be getting here in game one, I don't think was going to be overly effective.
When do you realistically think we see Le'Veon back on the field? I mean, I know Pouncey spoke out and said, oh, we expect Le'Veon to be in camp by Wednesday. I can't imagine he's anywhere close to 100%. Maybe week 3 at this point in terms of finding a full workload for him with the new offensive coordinator, Randy Fitchner, taking over for Todd Haley?
I guess, like last year he came in on Labor Day and it avoided a lot of the drama. Now I believe there was a situation where if he didn't report by Labor Day, there was potential for him to sit the first two games. It gave basically Pittsburgh the option to sit him. And it doesn't help his cause that James Conner was pretty effective in preseason. I don't know. He's certainly not the back of Le'Veon Bell, but he appears more competent in year two than he did as a rookie. And when, again, you're factoring in a guy that was probably going to be out of shape, that was still going to be working his way into the system, wasn't going to have a full snap allotment. I think they feel okay with James Conner, who was going to have an integral part in the first two games anyways.
I mean, we can say what we want about the Steelers not having Le'Veon Bell. We have questions, obviously, on the defense that looked ill-equipped to handle speed and athleticism once Ryan Shazier was lost for the campaign. But, Payne, how much of this line move is attributed to professional bettors believing that Cleveland's going to be significantly better? We mentioned the Hard Knocks buzz, and we had a great article on the site talking about their expected wins from a season ago. I mean, this should have been a 5- or 6-win football team. They were pretty unfortunate to finish that campaign 0-16.
Yeah, they were supposed to win 6 games last year based on the metrics. It certainly wasn't an 0-16 team. I believe when we ended the season, we had them power rated like 27th, something like that off the top of my head. And we've now seen like all the war metrics, and they say Tyrod's worth nearly 5 wins more than Kaiser. And you just look at some of those numbers, it appeared Cleveland's offense was like stopped before it even got started. 41 total giveaways. And you think about that, right? Like, 2.5 times a game, more than that, they're just giving the ball to the opponent. They just didn't give themselves a chance, and we know they'll have a chance with Tyrod because he just values the football so much. I know we talked about on the preview podcast a 1% interception rate. I think his mobility helps some too because there is question marks at left tackle. It's too bad, right? Joe Thomas decided to retire. Like, this being the year he decides to retire, because there's going to be a glaring issue at left tackle that we have to monitor, I think, all season long. I am intrigued to see the weapons. They're talking about Josh Gordon being on a snap count, not starting. If Josh Gordon isn't out there, certainly, you know, you like Landry, you like Njoku if he can take that next step in year two. But the weapons aren't as good as we think they are if Josh Gordon's not out there. That's pretty plain and simple.
I mean, he's the guy that takes the lid off of the defense. I mean, as far as their ground game, do you have any confidence in their ability to show balance and consistently run the football between the tackles?
Yeah, I do. Like last year, that was, you know, a bright spot of this offense. The problem was they were down a lot and they couldn't run the ball as much as they would have liked to. They were 10th in rushing success rate offense. You look last year, because Kaiser was the guy in the opening game, hey, it was going to be force Kaiser to beat us. So Crowell and Days, I think, had 40 yards on 20 carries in game one last year. I think with Tyrod, he's at least a capable passer. He makes good decisions. He's actually a very good deep ball passer. So you have to respect that. You're not just going to be able to load the box and think that you're going to, you know, just stop the ground game, because Tyrod is good enough to beat you with his arm. When I look at this number now, like, you know, I'm a little hesitant to enter at this point. So I think I'm on the sidelines for this game at its current price. It'll be interesting to see where this kind of jockeys back and forth.
In your opinion, I would say any chance you think it gets as low as a field goal, given some of the momentum here? I'm shocked, honestly, it's already down to 3.5 in some spots.
It's possible. I'm not sure we see another wave. You do have Hard Knocks on tonight, so that hype becomes a little bit more real. And if it's not completely lopsided, if I'm a book, I'm probably not going to 3. I'm not allowing myself to get middled, especially around a key. That's just me. So it would take another significant wave from a professional bettor or a group to get this down to 3.
Not going to disagree with you there. I mean, I think it'd be a massive leap of faith, considering when you look at Cleveland over their last 51 games, this is a team 15-35-1 against the spread. An other interesting note, Payne, I know we'll talk about in greater lengths as we discuss some of the bigger games for the Steelers. I mean, this is a team, the last 29 games they've left Heinz Field 23-6 to the under, and I don't see them as having a steel curtain defense. I think that's been more of an indictment of the way the offense kind of reins things in on the highway.
The offense isn't as good on the road, and I think that's expected, right? There's most offenses aren't as good on the road as they are at home, right? It's a little bit more friendlier at home. It isn't as noisy. It isn't as loud. You know, we had discussed some of Big Ben's road home splits. They weren't good in 2016. They were very bad. You know, 12% less pass completions on the road, 40 points lower in his passer rating on the road. But 2017, that changed. He was much better last year on the road. It's like people got to him. He was hearing the whispers about that. He improved immensely on the road. So that will be interesting to monitor here. I do like Cleveland's defense just a little bit better than last year. I like a lot of the parts they brought in. Denzel Ward is apparently a full go. And this is a guy who can just improve your secondary right away, I think, especially how the game's played now. There used to be like this transition for cornerbacks. You get into the league, it's a bit overwhelming. But now that the NFL is going a little bit more pass happy, mirroring college football, they can step right in. We saw that with young guys last year in Lattimore and Tre'Davious White. So I think Denzel Ward is kind of comparable to those guys. I know he only allowed 35% completions in college. So he's good to go. I think that's a big get back. I know there were some injury scares there in the preseason game.
Well, if you like their defense, Payne, I'm sure you'll like this next defense on display, which for me, one of the most intriguing games of the entire Sunday slate. It's the 49ers going on the road to take on the Minnesota Vikings. And as we look at this number, we have seen some interesting movement. I mean, a 4.5 for Minnesota, soft early on. This number has ballooned out to 6 at betonline.ag. We've also seen some under money enter the market from 47 down to 46. And I guess when we talk about the 49ers, the first question is Jimmy G's debut. And the reason I say debut, this is the first meaningful football game he's going to start since week one when he was a New England Patriot. Last season, of course, 67% completions, 1,500 plus yards, a 7-5 touchdown interception ratio, and a 5-0 record to close things out. He, of course, is going to enter the campaign without one of their primary weapons in the backfield, as far as 49er fans were concerned, and Jerick McKinnon. What do we make of Jimmy G and realistic expectations for him going into week one against a defense this stout?
It's going to be tough, obviously. And you know, McKinnon's a big loss. I'm not a fan of the contract part. But I think when it came to how McKinnon would have been used on the field with Shanahan, like, I think that's a big loss, especially in the passing game. You know, he was like just chomping at the bit to get to his old team there. I do like Alfred Morris, so I think that's going to help Jimmy G a little bit. He's probably a better between the tackles runner. He's a perfect fit for Shanahan's zone blocking run scheme. They've worked together in Washington. So I do like that. I actually like the addition of Mike McGlinchey as well. If you look at that offensive line now for San Francisco, there's 4 first round picks. And then they made the big splash in free agency. They signed Weston Richburg in the offseason, $48 million they inked him to. So Jimmy G has got like a brick wall around him. He's going to stay looking pretty, is my feeling. What it looked like to close last season, I know you discounted those games a little bit and said, you know, they weren't games that meant anything, and I hear you. But when you look at what Jimmy G was capable of doing, certainly everything is there. And the system, the reason why I think it translates just a little bit is the system that Shanahan runs is so tough to pick up. Everyone talks about it. People in the league talk about how complex this system is. So for him to just pick it up and be successful within like a couple weeks is, you got to just tip your cap to that. I do think the other defenses he was playing cared about those games. So, you know, that I get that the aspect of him not having pressure probably helped, but the other defenses cared. And that was the one big thing we saw. You look at the numbers from weeks 13 through 17, Garoppolo was the San Francisco had the number one passing success rate attack. Without Garoppolo other weeks, they were 30th in the NFL the previous 11 games. There's just a massive, massive upgrade here at quarterback.
And you mentioned it. I mean, he's clearly going to be tested. I mean, Minnesota last season ranked first in points allowed per game at under 16 yards allowed, 276, an opponent's third down percentage. But Payne, when I look at this game, I think, you know, Jimmy G against the Vikings defense is fascinating, but I'm almost as compelled by the other side of the ball. When I look at Kirk Cousins, who struggled a little bit through some of the preseason games, and this 49ers defense that has a lot of high-priced, high-drafted talent in Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner. You look at them going out and getting Solomon Thomas. But this was a defense that was well below average. How do they stack up against what Minnesota wants to do offensively, knowing a healthy Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, and Stephon Diggs are going to put a ton of pressure on a lot of the best stop units all fall long?
Yeah, that's certainly dynamic weapons there, without question. The part of Minnesota's offense that concerns me just a little bit is the O-line. And it took another hit. You had Nick Easton, who was a starter at guard. He is now out with, you know, he had back surgery, I guess, to a bulging disc. So that concerns me a little bit. Cousins is used to this. He dealt with a shoddy O-line last year in Washington. They were the third most injured, still completed 64% of his passes. So he has dealt with that. I just think it limits you in terms of how far your peak is, like how high is your peak with an offensive line that isn't great. You know, I am not sure, though, in this game, and you mentioned some of those names, I don't think San Francisco's D-line is good enough to cause, like, constant havoc in this game. And you listed off the names, like Solomon Thomas, you know, drafted, this would be year two now, out of Stanford. You had DeForest Buckner, you have Armstead. They've underachieved to this point.
You know, Payne, there is a common denominator from that trio of names. Can you figure out the common link between them?
Thomas, Buckner, Armstead. All West Coast guys. Pac-12 guys.
There we go. It fits right into your West Coast mentality, my friend.
So
defenders.
You know, there hasn't been much success from those guys. Maybe they're all young, so they have a chance to improve. I do like the defensive coordinator, but you just look last year, 29th in adjusted sack rate. So they couldn't get after the quarterback, 24th in rushing success rate. So they couldn't stop the run. So let's see if they're able to exploit that Minnesota offensive line, which is pretty weak. To me, there hasn't been a lot of additions to that front seven. Richard Sherman, let's see what he's got left in the tank. I know you've been reading the reports as much as I have. He's been getting torched in practice. Did show a little better against the Colts in the preseason game. I don't think we're going to see a massive leap here from the San Francisco defense, right? They're 26th last year in efficiency. It came against the 6th easiest schedule. Schedule gets much tougher this year. And I think it starts with the Minnesota Vikings. The one interesting thing here, and we talk about Shanahan being the offensive guy, but maybe he can help the defense this week. This is a guy who spent 2 full seasons every single day with Kirk Cousins. He knows his tendencies. He knows the balls he likes to throw. He knows where his weaknesses are. So maybe he can help the defense out in that regard. So that'll be something interesting to monitor.
I like that angle quite a bit. They're going to need to do everything they can to slow down a Vikings team that has been an ATM in their home games. The last 51 times they've played in the Twin Cities, 34-16-1 against the number. Their last 61 games overall, Payne, 42-19 against the spread if you bet them blind. Pretty impressive.
And that's why we're seeing this move, right? Because we've talked about this ad nauseum. Vikings seem to be one of the most underrated teams in the NFL. Then you had the hype train on San Francisco. And while we think they're going to be improved, the market and bookmakers probably over-adjusted. So we've seen professional money on the under on the win total. Now we're seeing professional money in week one on Minnesota. So it's like basically the opposite ends of the market spectrum on these two teams.
Public perception plays a huge role. And I know you say it until you're blue in the face. And I think a lot of our listeners heard it for the last handful of years. It's the one sport where public bias is going to impact lines, not only week to week, but over the course of a full 17-week schedule. And no greater illustration of that in the playoffs, but I'm getting way ahead of ourselves before we even play a single regular season game. And a team who'd love to have aspirations in the playoffs, Payne, I think would be the New York Football Giants. They find themselves 3-point home underdogs at betonline.ag as the Jacksonville Jaguars come a-calling. You look at this over-under at 43.5. This is a number, Payne, where Jacksonville opened up in April at 4-point chalk. You've seen a lot of momentum for the Giants. And I think for me, the biggest question mark I have here, what will this new look offensive line for the Giants, how will it hold up against Jacksonville's strength, which is their defensive line?
Well, you love Nate Solder, obviously. Willie Hernandez looks like he's a good get. That's a great sign for the New York Giants, I must say, right there. you got Patrick Omamahe. I believe he's an upgrade. The one thing that's interesting for me is we know Pat Shurmur has hung around some of like the best offensive minds. He's got the West Coast offense. He's been under Andy Reid, stole some tricks from Chip Kelly. Norv Turner has kind of opened his mind up to the deep passing game, so I think he likes to take some shots there. And Pat Shurmur's called his offense the power spread. And I think when you look at Eli at this stage in his career, and he's never been mobile, I would still expect just a lot of deception. And that's one thing when you go back and put on the Minnesota Vikings game tape from last year is there was a ton of deception and helped Case Keenum out immensely. Nearly 40% of Keenum's yards with Shurmur calling the shots came on plays that were either screens or had some type of play fake implemented. So I would envision we see that here. Should be some running with Saquon, but when they do decide to pass, there's going to be a lot of deception. Could be some quicker stuff occasionally with the deep shots sprinkled in. I think what's interesting about this is we talked about that suspect Minnesota Vikings offensive line last year, still suspect this year, but despite all that, you know, just kind of what Shurmur implemented had them pretty efficient, right? It was top 15 in rushing success rate. It was top 5 in passing success rate. So despite that poor offensive line, Shermer's system and scheme was still able to do a lot of things efficiently, and I think that'll be the case here for the Giants as well.
I mean, if you're the Giants, you know you have the weapons. I mean, you mentioned Barkley, obviously a healthy Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram. You know, when you try and break the game down, do you give advantage to a team that's going to put a new scheme together under Pat Shurmur for the Giants, or do you give the edge to the defense? We know what Jacksonville is going to do. There aren't really any surprises there. I mean, who kind of gets the you know, the intangible or a slight tick up. An offense trying to figure out its identity or the fact that they'll have the element of surprise working in their favor.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about Jacksonville being one of the very best units in the NFL. And so I think if you're a Giants offense, like a stalemate would be a win. Certainly, it's difficult implementing a new system, and you're not going to be as good game one as you are game seven. That's just the reality of the situation. And certainly there's one-offs, right, where you have anomalies. But over the course, you talk to a lot of these coaches, it takes about half a season to get your offense running optimally with a new system. So Jacksonville's going to hit the ground running day one. We'll see what we can get from the Giants offense. I think there needs to be an element of the ground game. And I talked a little bit about this on the preview podcast, so I don't want to rehash too much, but let's see what Saquon Barkley is as a runner. You know, there were some games last year where Penn State could not get that ground game going. Certainly, he is as talented as anyone, and he has that home run threat, but he was stopped behind the line of scrimmage a lot last year because he likes to dance. He likes to bounce everything outside. Let's see if he's learned to be a between-the-tackles runner, and if he is, the New York Giants have a shot offensively.
Well, and you mentioned between the tackles runners. We know Jacksonville's bread is buttered with Leonard Fournette. Alec Ogletree, the linebacker the Giants acquired from the Rams this offseason, comes out and says it. They're definitely a team that likes to run the ball. We're going to pride ourselves in stopping the run each and every week. What better way than to start with them? And I ask you this, Payne, do we think the Giants are capable of making Jacksonville's offense somewhat one-dimensional?
That's a good quote, actually. It's pretty cool. You know, and he's spot on because Jacksonville is a run first offense. They ran it 2% more than the second most run heavy offense, to put that in perspective. I would think, you know, when you look at the Giants defensively, like Damon Harrison is the very best run stopping defensive tackle. It's been 5 years in a row. He's graded out that. They added Delvin Tomlinson last year. That was a welcomed addition to the interior. But oddly combined, it was just this below average run stopping unit. I think they were 19th in rushing success rate. So this will be interesting for me to see how this Giants defense responds. The talent is there. I love James Betcher. I think that's a good get there. When you look at what he brought over from Arizona, it was an aggressive style of defense. It was an attacking style of defense. I would think we see something similar. You look what he did as a defensive coordinator those three seasons. Arizona finished third, third, and fourth in defensive efficiency. We know the talent is there on that side of the ball. I think they'll be a little bit more rejuvenated. I do want to touch on this just a little bit again because I think there's a lot of people that don't listen to the preview podcast that will tune in for week one. When you looked at a lot of the efficiency metrics of the Giants year over year, we saw in 2016, it was an elite unit, right? Second in defensive efficiency. They faced a ridiculously tough schedule. Last year, the schedule got easier and they regressed all the way to 26th. And you try to find reasons why this is happening. And so Landon Collins comes out, calls teammates out multiple times last season for their effort, for their lack of energy. And then you're able to compare that to some of the metrics and you look at the next gen stats and it was quite clear, like guys weren't running as hard, they weren't running as fast, and they weren't running as far. So I think we'll just get a lot of progression from this Giants defense simply because of effort. And that's what it takes to play defense.
You can't hide from modern technology these days. So for any NFL players or athletes in any sport, when you're being tracked in all of your movements, you may not want to be out there loafing because the proof will be in the pudding. So it'll definitely be interesting to see the Giants with a renewed outlook, a change in coaching philosophy, and a lot of optimism in Gotham for this team, you know, having an ability to compete for a division title. I think that's a leap of faith, but we'll see what the new look Big Blue is on Sunday against Jacksonville. The Patriots and Texans, Payne. It's New England, a 6-point favorite at betonline.ag. One of the highest totals for week one set at 51. A rematch of sorts for a classic last season where Deshaun Watson went 22 of 33, two touchdowns, two picks, carried the ball eight times for 41 yards. I guess for me, when I try and identify a matchup that I have the most questions and I'm hoping you can shed some light on it, it's that New England receiving core that's been much maligned all offseason against the Houston Texans secondary that I think anybody who has this team pegged as a dark horse, as a sleeper, call them what you will within the AFC, wants to see how that particular group is going to play out over the course of the regular season.
Right now it's Chris Hogan. That's it. Chris Hogan and Gronk. It will be interesting to see what they do with James White. I know we've talked about this potentially the first 4 weeks with Edelman out, you see James White potentially lined up as a slot receiver. I could see that coming to fruition. I think he'll be needed. So that will be something to monitor here. when you look at the Texans defense, you know, it's tough to gauge. I kind of want to throw out last year, they were the eighth most injured defense. You know, once Watt and Merciless went out, it just kind of allowed everyone to focus on Clowney. And he really had a good year despite seeing just doubles nonstop. But without those two guys, it just left the secondary really susceptible. I like the additions in the offseason with Colvin, who graded out one of the best slot corners. They bring in the Honey Badger. So those were good gets for the secondary. And I would think, or at least you would hope, Kevin Johnson returns fully healthy, dealt with some nagging stuff last year. He was a first-round pick, but he was dreadful. Dead last, allowed a 137 passer rating on throws his ways. So you need an improvement from that dude, and if you get it, I like the rest of the Houston secondary with the additions.
When we look at Houston offensively, Deshaun Watson, of course, coming back from that knee injury, we know how much everyone else's productivity ticked up with him under center, whether it's Lamar Miller, whether it's DeAndre Hopkins, and what this offense looked like, at least for fits and spurts during that brief glimpse we got. How do we think that unit stacks up against the New England defense that for a lot of times last year really underwhelmed, but we know New England's mentality has always been bend but don't break. We'll hold you to field goals, and in our opinion, that's a win.
This is tough for me because, you know, you can't question Deshaun Watson's talent. The eye test is off the charts. I like the idea of him wanting to constantly be aggressive. And when you chart this, Deshaun Watson, over 20% of his passes went 20 or more yards. That was number one in the NFL. And you look at his complement of weapons, right? You probably have two very good deep weapons with Hopkins and Fuller. When you start to dig into the metrics, though, you know, they indicate that he was a bit inaccurate. He made a ton of turnover-worthy throws. And you look at Hopkins and Fuller, and they make up for a lot of his issues. There was extremely low drop rates from those two guys, like off the charts kind of things that aren't usually sustainable. That's how low the drop rates were. There was a lot of the 50-50 ball catches. And I get this because everyone plays fantasy now, and we look at the numbers Watson was putting up, and there are a ton of wow plays, and there's certainly an ability for Deshaun Watson to be one of the league's very best quarterbacks because the talent is there. We just need to see it fully translate to the field in all aspects. There's one thing when you start looking at film that differs from like the stats and metrics is the film will let you know if there are things that potentially aren't happening in the stats, like interceptable passes, turnover-worthy throws are throws that were turnover-worthy, but potentially didn't lead to a turnover. So you're not going to get that in the stats. So those are the things that we need to see improvement on from Deshaun Watson. And certainly if he does those things, Houston's going to not only vie for this division, but could make some noise in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have this team pegged to make a deep, deep run, but you mentioned it. Can Deshaun Watson take the next step? I mean, he's got to do it over the course of a full season, not just a few short weeks here or there, and highlight worthy plays. When we look at this number pain, I mean, are you surprised that we've seen money come in on the Texans? And I guess the next question becomes, we've seen sevens disappear, six and a halfs disappear. Do we think it's going to go under the full six?
You know why asking me that question is kind of funny to me. But I don't know where it goes from here. Certainly that is the sharp side. I would think when you're looking at the return of, you know, a lot of the guys on the defensive side of the ball for Houston, and I like some of their young guys. Cunningham was a nice get last year, really came into his own. And I think the scary part here is if those guys return to form, J.J. Watt and Merciless, there are some question marks with New England's offensive line. And I know Dante Scarnecchia is an elite offensive mind, one of the best in the business, but you lose Nate Solder. You drafted Isaiah Wynn to replace him. He's now out. Your right tackle, Marcus Cannon, is probably a long shot to play in this game. So you're without your two tackles. And that's partly why we've seen this move here down to six. I don't know where this goes. It's certainly New England's going to be the public side. There's certainly that element of New England owning this series. But I could see a situation where we potentially get to that, you know, below six.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. I mean, and we'll, of course, get Dave's take. I know this will be a game that I'm sure he's got some strong sentiments on in terms of the early action that the book has seen. We know New England, as you mentioned, a very public team. Seemingly every week, the general public can count on two things, betting on New England and betting against Cleveland. We'll see if any of that changes in 2018. To a late afternoon game, which I think is relatively intriguing, maybe for all the wrong reasons, because I have no idea what to expect from either of these sides this season. It's the Carolina Panthers, a 3-point home favorite at betonline.ag, total 42.5 when the Dallas Cowboys come a-calling. And I guess, Payne, when we look at Carolina and their outlook for the season, it's attrition, attrition, attrition. And the biggest question mark, I think, starts with that offensive line that's dealt with a myriad of injuries so far through camp.
And I'm going to go off on just a little question to you, because I don't even know what you just asked as I'm looking at the screen right now. I've kind of been hinting at, like, I know you joke about me having like 7 different phone numbers. No one else is on this call but me and you, and every single game we seem to be talking about right now is on the move.
Wait, you didn't see me tweet out the access code to try and jump on our recording software? So anybody who wanted to be a part of this in real time could get down before this thing went live to the masses?
It always freaks me the hell out when that happens, and it's like every single game that we've just talked about is doing it.
I mean, I never know which number you're going to call me from. 7 numbers may feel a little bit light. I figured you were up to 17 as you continue to grow in this industry.
So that's always just, freaks me out a little bit. You were asking about Dallas, Carolina. Would you ask the Carolina? I'm sorry. I was looking at the screen.
Yeah, about Carolina's offensive line and what you make of all the injuries they've had to deal with and bringing in a ton of fresh faces. Never usually ideal. And we talk about how important chemistry and the cohesive component is for that brick wall in front of a quarterback like Cam.
Yeah. I mean, there's been issues all offseason with that O-line and you lost Andrew Norwell. Left in free agency, went to Jacksonville. So that's just a big hit right there. Your left tackle, Matt Khalil, was put on the IR, so he's going to miss at least the first 8 games. You did get some good news with some, you know, other guys on the line returning to practice, but I think there's still a scare there, and that's why you go and trade for Corey Robinson from Detroit, who at this point is nothing more than a backup. So that will be interesting to monitor there, that offensive line, because Dallas's defensive line is sneaky good. There are a lot of quick twitch guys on that defensive line that can cause some havoc. Norv Turner, obviously, I think everyone knows my thoughts on him. Not very high on him. This is going to be his 4th offensive coordinator job.
Can I ask one question here? Yeah. Not to cut you off. Why does everybody around the football community seem to think that he is the greatest offensive mastermind, and that somehow every time he lands in a new spot, he's going to resurrect a game plan or try and figure things out? Because I trust your opinion on this topic much more than I do a lot of the talking heads. Is it just because he's part of that old boys network?
I think you probably hit the nail on the head. You are more of a corporate guy than I. And so being nice, kissing people's asses, that seems to keep you in the mix.
What are you trying to say here, Payne?
Like, I say whatever the heck I want, and you're certainly more filtered, and I think a lot of people like that better. And I would, if I was in a corporate setting, I'd probably operate the same way. So I think that has a lot to do with it. I think there's an idea of the style in which he employs is pretty good, right? We're going to run a little bit. When we do pass, it's going to be, you know, get the ball out quick, but we're also going to take like deep shots to open things up. So I think the idea of the offense is good, potentially calling the plays, knowing the situations he's probably not the best at. And I said this earlier, this is his 4th OC job since 2012, and he was completely unemployed 1 year. So that's tough to do. He's been bouncing around. In those last 4 jobs, the best offense he's ever had finished 16th in efficiency. Most offenses improve as soon as he leaves the door. It's usually addition by subtraction for good old Norv.
Yeah, let's hope this podcast doesn't improve if you ever kick me to the curb, because it won't exactly be a ringing endorsement on my resume going forward. When we look at Dallas offensively against Carolina on the defensive side, I mean, we know what kind of force Luke Kuechly is when he can stay on the field. He'll be without one of his running mates, Thomas Davis, suspended 4 games for PEDs. And all the questions, of course, Payne, as they pertain to Dallas, the offensive line without Travis Frederick, you know, who's going to step up in Des Bryant's absence? Can they rely on Michael Gallup? And what will a healthy Ezekiel Elliott mean to this offense when he's on the field, knowing his game-breaking potential?
Yeah, so let's start up front. And you know, when you talk about Dallas, they're just so reliant on the offensive line. That's just how they're schemed. It's how they're built. So I think when you lose the center, obviously it's massive. He touches the ball on every single play. He's one of the positions I think the public undervalues. But I think more than any other team, like, You know, Travis Frederick is a massive loss just with how you want to employ your style. Zach Martin is going to play. He was back at practice, so I think that's big. But any drop-off to the offensive line, to the run game, is massive. And I think it has an impact here, certainly. Zeke, to me, could be the X factor, and a lot of people are saying, like, oh, no shit. But I think he's in shape this year. And, you know, he got a little pleasantly plump last year. There's reasons he struggled in Denver at altitude. He just wasn't in shape. You know, he did have the suspension looming over his head. This year, he has come in freak condition shape, so I think that's going to help. And I know you look at a lot of his metrics, like he was still 57% success rate on his rushes, which is just, you know, depicts how valuable he is in his talent. But he did drop off to about the seventh best back overall last year by the metrics. So that was a big tail off from being number one his rookie season. None of that can happen if Dallas is going to be successful. You mentioned Dez Bryant and, you know, the Dallas receiving core. Let's be frank, they're not good. But the idea that Allen Hurns and they drafted Michael Gallup, that they can't at least match what a declining Dez Bryant did last year, I think is banana land. You know, you look at all these metrics. Dez was 80th out of 96 qualifying receivers. The guy had a 52% catch rate. He was once a very good player. You know, I think the public gets lost in the past, right? The name. But the numbers that we have, like, just kind of depict what's currently going on. And Dez Bryant just wasn't a very good receiver. And I think the other element here is this position group has heard all offseason about them being bad, about them being the weak link. I would think there's been some buy-in, and as a core group, they'll be just as good as last year.
I'm very curious to see what we get out of Dallas. We know things haven't exactly been rosy as far as outlook's concerned. We talked about them at great lengths. Encourage folks to go back and listen to exactly how we feel about the Cowboys and where their win total will stack up in that preseason podcast. So interesting game here. We have seen some money come in on the under as well. Curious to see where that number ultimately settles on top of things. To Sunday Night Football, Payne, where we have one of the oldest rivalries in the National Football League that now, with some added intrigue, given a key offseason acquisition for the Chicago Bears. This number's gone from Green Bay, an 8.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, down to 7.5. We look at this total holding strong at 47. Now, I know that's no man's land, but I guess when we talk about the Bears, we have to start with the acquisition of Khalil Mack and what he means not only to this game, but maybe their overall season outlook, because we have seen a book out here in Las Vegas adjust their win total by nearly 3/4 of a game and cut their odds to win the Super Bowl in more than half by just adding one key cog defensively.
He's a good player. There's no question about that. Is he almost a full game better? I don't know.
Go ahead. I didn't want to cut you off.
Say what you're going to say. It sounded like it was going to be funny.
No. I'm trying to think. I mean, I didn't know they were acquiring an entirely new defense. I don't think one player in this day and age in the NFL, even as good as Khalil Mack, is worth anything close to a full game. It's more public perception than anything else.
Well, you know, Chicago is a public team. Obviously plays a premium position. Right. In this day and age when, you know, passing matters, getting after the passer is equally important. So that's a huge get. And I think overall it was a little bit of the market not factoring in how good Chicago could be in addition to Khalil Mack. You know, Vic Fangio is awesome. He is extremely respected for what he's done over his career. I think more so recently, you know, we saw Matt Nagy come in. He put the full court press to retain Fangio. We saw Chicago's defense last year, and I think this is why we see this big jump here for Chicago. Last year, they were 14th in efficiency, right? They played the second toughest schedule. And now you just have, like, Fangio wakes up. It's Christmas morning. He's got new toys to play with. It's just not Khalil Mack, but I think Roquan Smith is just a day one impact player in the middle of that defense. He can range sideline to sideline. He can cover tight ends. He can cover running backs. He is extremely smart. And so when you're just, it's adding premium positions. And I think that's what we're seeing here, partly of this move. The week one line certainly some sharp money on Chicago, without question.
When you look at the other side, Green Bay, of course, goes out and they improve their defense significantly, in my opinion, and significantly for the Packers might be just getting to middle of the pack. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers being out there helps the defense as much as anything else because they can keep their offense on the field for more than three and outs. How do you see this new look Bears offense potentially having some of the playmakers and weapons to attack Green Bay to keep this game inside the number?
Well, I just think, you know, you look at Matt Nagy, he knows what the hell he's doing. Like, he's got a pulse. Last year's offense was very bad, whether it was, and I think most of it to do with the head coach kind of suppressing the ideas and the thoughts of the offensive minds on that side of the ball. Matt Nagy's, again, highly respected. We saw what he did in Kansas City with that offense. It's not just about being the offensive coordinator. It was having the confidence in his head coach, because Andy Reid went to him after Reid was struggling to call plays. We saw that offense sputter for about a 6-week stretch where Kansas City was 20th in passing success rate, 24th in rushing success rate. And Andy Reid went to Matt Nagy and said, hey, listen, like, I need some help here. And it paid huge. It paid out big. The final five games, the Chiefs offense improved to 5th in passing success, 10th in rushing success rate. We saw them go to nearly 30 points per game. So we know what Matt Nagy is offensively. I think he's got some weapons there. I am big on Jordan Howard. I'm just a big Jordan Howard guy. I like the offensive line. I think that improves. When you look at where Trubisky succeeds, it's throwing the ball into the seam. I like the weapons they got to complement that idea of where he likes to throw the ball. Trey Burton is going to be the beneficiary of a lot of these throws. I was reading a press clipping thing from Matt Nagy yesterday where he was talking about, hey, we're going to play three tight ends potentially all at the same damn time. And, you know,
it's like NFL in Chicago.
Well, I think that's like the misconception with this day and age about how to run offense is like, yeah, it's a pass happy league, but you could pass from run formations. It's actually more deceptive. It actually forces the defense to put them, you know, to put packages together that have more run guys to where, you know, when you do decide to pass, you're going to have more advantages. It's much more difficult when we talk about a pass offense operating with four or five wide receivers and just saying, hey, go, because the defense just puts in their dime packages. They throw in more DB. So if you can pass from run formations, that's the most efficient way to run your offense. So we know Adam Shaheen is on the IR now, so that plan got soiled a little bit, so it should be even more targets for Trey Burton, which is a positive. And again, when you looked at Trubisky and you kind of looked at his passing trees and things like that, was the number one seam passer in all of the NFL. So I just think it meshes with what Nagy likes to do. We saw what he did with Kelsey. I think there's going to be ample opportunity for the Chicago offense just to improve dramatically and how they run the ball. That's the other thing. You look at what, you know, Kareem Hunt was the beneficiary of what Matt Nagy did. When he wanted to run the ball, he made smaller boxes by spreading teams out. You go three wide receivers, then you run into less jammed boxes. And I think I think Jordan Howard has a big year because of that.
Should be interesting. I know a lot of people very high on the Bears. I'm curious to see how they're priced week in,
week
out.
Schedule is very tough. But I think week to week, as you're about to hit on, could be some value.
Yeah, I was going to say the win total felt right where it needed to be. You know you're going to get some uneven performances from a sophomore quarterback in Mitch Trubisky, and even if he takes the next step, I don't think we're going to see a Jared Goff-like transformation just because he doesn't have the same supporting cast around him that Coach McVay had for the Rams. So Bears will be a very intriguing team. There is one other major game worth discussing, Payne, that of course being the Thursday Night Football game. But before we get there, it's time to talk to the third member of our talented triumvirate. We welcome in Dave Mason now for his weekly visit. You, of course, can follow Dave on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. And Dave, college football officially in the books at least week one. We shift our attention to the NFL. How much, you know, what do you guys expect for a customer surge when it comes to the NFL over college?
Yeah, I mean, college football week one's huge, but NFL week one, I mean, you probably see an extra 25 to 33% extra people come in for NFL week one, which we're really excited about because college football, I know we don't want to talk about today, or we're going to talk about more at the college football podcast, but college football week one, the action was massive and the people coming to the site and signing up and reactivation. So we're really excited to see what happens over the next few days.
And I mean, Payne and I broke down a lot of the marquee games on the week one slate earlier in the show. These numbers you guys have had up at your shop since the middle of April. What are some of the biggest movers you've seen thus far?
Oh, wow. There's been a lot. Those early numbers can be kind of soft sometimes with a lot of information to come out and everything. But I mean, the Rams, they opened a pick and versus the Raiders. That sets up to 4.5 right now. Falcons were getting 4.5, I believe. They're down to two, they're only getting 2.5 now for the opener. Browns, that was 6.5. That's down to, they're just getting 4.5 now at Pittsburgh. So those are some of the biggest off the top of my head. But yeah, you look at that whole board and everything was moving quite a bit.
Dave, when we look at week one, a lot of those moves you just talked about, mostly sharp. Anything else glaring on the board in terms of sharp money, sides or totals?
Yeah, definitely all three of those have been sharp. Falcons got hit. They're down to 2.5, like I said. The Rams, they were sharp move at -3, -3.5. They're at -4.5 now. Like I said, Denver -2. They're now -3. Carolina -2, -2.5. They're up to a field goal favorite. Cleveland +6.5 was sharp. Like I said, they're down 4.5. Over in the Bengals, it's now was 46 on the sharp side, and now it's 46.5. So those are some of the sharper plays, and more to come this weekend as the action nears.
Anything that's going to be a big decision for the house in terms of public sides?
Oh yeah, there's tons of them. The biggest looks like, I mean, the Rams on Monday night, 72% and 79% of the money's on the Rams, and of course that's going to be a Monday night game, so that's going to be our biggest sweat of the weekend. Last game of the weekend, but also Patriots, shocker, right? Here we go again. 67% of the bets and 78% of the money's on the Patriots. The Saints, 72% of the bets and 76% of the money's on the Saints. The Ravens looks like a big play. 84% of the bets and 91% of the early money's on the Ravens. And the Steelers, even though the Sharps are on the other side, 67% of the bets and 62% of the money's on the Steelers. For Thursday night opener, looks like we will be Philly fans. 57% of bets and 65% of the money is on the Falcons. So that's another big, will be another big decision.
Always crazy, Dave. The more things change, the more they stay the same. The public looking to fade the Cleveland Browns and ride the New England Patriots to the pay window. For those folks, though, that may not already be playing at betonline.ag, what kind of promotions are available for first-time card users, and what can some of our former players look if they want to reload their accounts in anticipation of NFL Week 1?
Yes, sir. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, sign up for one. Use promo code 75BTB for a one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and have not used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% bonus. The max bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard. And one last thing, we have a $25,000 survivor pool and a $25,000 NFL pick'em up there too. Everybody gets one free entry. You just got to send us action to win the money, and that's cash prizes.
Dave, always great to talk to you, especially about the NFL. We know where you'll be on opening night, probably a few adult beverages deep, helping the Philadelphia Eagles try and celebrate, you know, raising that banner at Lincoln Financial Field. It's been a long time coming for you boys.
That's right. I'll with you. Bet the over on the beverages.
That's Dave Mason. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. Dave, great to hear from you. We'll talk a little college football later this week, and best of luck this weekend in the professional ranks.
All right, fellas. Thanks.
You know, Payne, I'm almost disappointed that Dave, knowing how busy he is this time of year, isn't able to make the trip to Philadelphia and take part in some of those championship festivities like he did when Villanova actually won. He saw it take place on the hardwood.
It's a big year for Mason with Villanova and the Eagles. I don't think I've ever had that for any of my teams that I actually enjoy.
Well, I mean, you might be waiting for a while for the Dolphins to ultimately win a Super Bowl. So your best hope is going to be that the Yankees and Florida State all come together at a head over the next 2 to 3 years.
That movement, the Glaber movement, hopefully it's pays off.
We'll see if he can take home the hardware and win Rookie of the Year with Miguel Andujar breathing down his neck.
Should I be giving the pitch now? Should I be given the full-blown pitch about how those two aren't even remotely close?
Like, I mean, it's gotta be Gleyber Torres. If you feel you have MVP voters for Major League Baseball that are going to be tuning into our podcast, I mean, I'd give you about 30 seconds to make that pitch.
It's absolute banana land if Miguel Andujar wins Rookie of the Year. Like, it's just absolutely nuts.
I figured there was going to be something more compelling there, but all right, we'll go with that.
Well, it's right in front of your face. I don't think it needs to be. I mean, he's more versatile. He's more valuable. He isn't a sieve at defense. Like, it's not even remotely close. It's also 2 years younger, but that's beside the point. Let's go.
All right, we got one last football game to break down. It's Thursday night from Philadelphia, as we mentioned. The now defending Super Bowl champion Eagles will start their quest for a repeat, playing host to the Atlanta Falcons. This number, as Dave mentioned, 4.5 in the offseason, now down to 2.5 at betonline.ag. You've also seen some under money come in as well. 45 is what we'll call the total. Payne, the Eagles finally come out. Doug Peterson makes it known what we've speculated for weeks, that Carson Wentz wasn't going to be cleared for contact and available to play. Nick Foles gets the nod. Are you on board with the number moving? And I guess the next question is, how much further do we think this number moves, if at all, as the public starts to get involved here?
So, you know, we kind of envisioned Wentz wasn't going to play. And I think there's some other injuries, question mark at left tackle. With Peters, looks like he might play now. You know, will he be 100%? Who knows? I just think there's this, you know, you have Brandon Graham as well. He says he's 80%. He's going to try to play week one. I just don't get the vibe that you're going to want to play a lot of these guys when your, you know, aspirations are repeating. I just can't see you just rushing guys back week one. When it comes to Foles, and I hate to say this, I think at some point, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we're going to be scratching our heads and be like, what the hell just happened during that 3-game playoff run? Like, it's one of those anomalies.
Jeff Hostetler type territory, bro.
I mean, and I don't want to, you know, piss on Nick Foles, but like, and he won a championship and kudos to him. He was fantastic for 3 games. They couldn't have done it without him. This is a guy, though, that was almost forced into retirement because of shoulder issues. Even during that playoff run, you had like highly respected team doctors in his own building saying like, man, I don't know. The arm looks a little off. It's a little weak. And then we even just saw this preseason. He looks like a mess. And the tune-up game there against Cleveland, did you hear what Doug Peterson said at halftime? He's like, I can't watch him anymore. I got to take him out. Can't watch him anymore. So, you know, these things kind of scare me a little bit when I'm trying to evaluate Philadelphia, at least early on in the season. There also appears to be that ability that they're reading their press clippings. And Malcolm Jenkins came out, I think, late last week, and he just urged Doug Peterson to remove the championship banners from the locker room. There was just not a lot of energy going on. There was a lot of complacency. Finally, I think Doug Peterson gave in. So that scares me that a week up to this game, there's still those issues where they've just kind of been off partying all offseason. And I think you get a different vibe from Atlanta, right? So there is that situational edge here. This is a Falcons team, right? They got bounced out by the Eagles last year. So this is one that's just been circled on the schedule all offseason. I don't want to take a lot from the preseason, obviously, but the Eagles were outscored like 82-44 in the preseason. They just looked like a shell of themselves. These are the reasons why this line has moved. And I think we're also going to see, and you know, we can touch on this. I don't know. Atlanta's offense, I think, is going to be vastly improved.
Well, you mentioned the Eagles defense, and let's start there before we dissect Atlanta's offense further. Malcolm Jenkins, how good can this defense be, or do you think there's a little bit of regression? We know they went out this offseason and tried to fortify it with some big names, but you do wonder about the level of productivity you're going to get there. I personally think, and don't know your feeling, that getting a healthy Jordan Hicks back means a lot more than anything else they did.
Listen, I like Bennett on the field, and he's a welcomed addition. He's going to be much improved. They're going to spend money on that side of the ball. They have the nice salary cap there. Hicks is a big get back if they can get him. But, you know, the secondary improved late in the season last year. You'd like to continue to see those steps. When you looked at the schedule last year, they were playing some inferior offenses. There was just like this stretch in the middle of the season where they just played like absolute hogwash at quarterback for like about 5 weeks in a row. So I think a lot of those metrics were a bit skewed, but I do think this is still talent-wise one of the best defenses in the league. And once they get fully healthy, once they turn on and flip the switch, which I think there is an ability to do, we're going to see one of the preeminent defenses in the league.
And that preeminent defense going to get tested by the Atlanta Falcons offense. And a Falcons offense that ranked just 23rd last year in red zone scoring, finishing with a touchdown less than 50% of the time. Obviously paying a major part of those struggles. They couldn't get the ball to Julio Jones. Year two with Steve Sarkisian calling the shots. What kind of regression to the better do we think we're going to get from Atlanta?
Positive regression. Yes, I think we see that, obviously. And when you look and break up last year's season in parts, Sark did make some improvements the second half of the season. There were some adjustments made. There was more of a focus on getting Julio the ball. I like to think that there was just a lot of misfortune last year. And listen, we saw Atlanta even with Shanahan, as great as he was, in year one, there was still that adjustment period. Like, Matt Ryan's been learning new offenses, and I get that he's a veteran, but it takes time. So I think year two with Sark is a positive. But again, there's just a lot of misfortune. You mentioned the red zone, and certainly that's an area where you need to be good, obviously, but there is some luck sprinkled in there year over year. That's not something that's completely constant, especially offensively. So you had, you know, some poor struggles in the red zone. But when you look at Matt Ryan, and we tracked all this crap, he threw 13 passes total last year that graded interceptable. He ended with 13 interceptions. And, you know, I just want to kind of put this in perspective. You look at a guy like Russell Wilson, he threw 32 passes last year that graded interceptable, finished with just 11 interceptions. So when you look at the luck factor, I think there's going to be just massive progression from just a little bit of improvement in the red zone, just a little bit improvement with turnover luck. And I do like the addition of Calvin Ridley. The speed there really limits what opposing defenses can do to kind of go over the top of Julio. There's talks about getting Austin Hooper more involved in the offense. He spent much of the offseason just hanging on Matt Ryan's arm. I think we see more than like a 7% usage rate there for Austin Hooper. So I do like the idea of the offense being much improved.
And I know we talked about it kind of at the top. I mean, this number here, if you missed the four and you wanted to make a case for the Falcons, I mean, becomes a teaser leg. I mean, we can't sit here and advocate for taking the worst of the number, I wouldn't think.
What's interesting here is I could, and this is what's so tough for me is, you know, this line was even higher than four. There was some 4.5. And then early on in the summer, there was even some like 5.5. But just more recently, within like the last 2 weeks, you could have got 4.5. You could have got four. There was even 3.5 earlier last week. And again, you know, going from 3.5 to 2.5, and you're talking about a 6.5% edge there. So you don't want to lose that. That said, I could certainly see a situation where, you know, there's potential for this game to close near pick. Maybe that's a good idea that you have, pairing Atlanta in a 6-team teaser, getting them back above the key of 3-7 and some secondary numbers and 4-6. So that makes some sense there. Finding the paired leg, you know, probably a little bit more of a difficult task. I don't really want to endorse anything, but I think Nathan Peterman probably struggles a little bit.
I was going Ravens.
Yeah. So, you know, you don't want to decrease some of the value in the Atlanta thing. And again, I think it potentially has the makings of closing pick, but you know, I could be wrong there, obviously.
All right. Seven of the biggest breakdowns we've concluded, at least to give folks a little better idea as they enter their pick'em pools and all that sort of thing. One thing, Payne, I want to take umbrage with Dave, and I wish I had seen this before he actually got off the show. So betonline.ag hangs odds on if I'm going to get fired from the new show on Fox.
Really?
So they go, which personality will be the first to leave or be fired from Lock It In on Fox Sports 1? Cousin Sal, 2-1 an odds on favorite. Rachel Bonetta listed at 5-2. Clay and I pick up the rear at a shade less than 3-1. I mean, I was hoping I was going to be a long shot here. You tell me I'm corporate guy. I don't say anything. I'm controversial. I figured I'd at least be safe for a couple of months.
I didn't see those odds, but I think you should be fine. You get some good intel.
I got to try and pick a few winners along the way. But either way, I mean, I'm not going to go off on a tangent since we got in the win column to kick things off in college, I assume, and I'm very confident we will do the same in the NFL. So what investment from numbers currently out there really catches your eye this coming Sunday?
Yeah, a lot of this is pretty beat up. I think the number that is still available on a game that we bet is Cincinnati, 4-5-7. The Bengals +3, still widely available at that number. First of all, the Colts defense, I think, is going to be a sieve. I do like all their additions in the offseason. I like Reich. The other aspect of this game is I know we were very happy about what Andrew Luck looked like. Much improved body stature, let's put it that way. It looks like he's struggling a little bit to throw the ball. And so, I don't know where I can go with this. I was trying to figure it out, but I didn't know if you wanted me to throw you a lifeline
or a life preserver or just let you kind of flounder around at the end of the hook.
Yeah, I don't know if we like Cincinnati. I obviously, you know, don't want to divulge too much, but I think they're going to have some success there offensively. I do. I like the weapons. They're at least going to be healthy at the beginning of the season when you talk about John Ross and Tyler Eifert. So you get them game one, right? We're not assessing that, you know, their availability come week seven. This is about game one. And so far at this point, they should be healthy. The team playing can get tough every now and then. You bounce around in the aisles. Could lead to some injury with guys like Ross and Eifert, but I think we're okay for game one. The idea that the Colts offense, you know, struggling to run the ball a little bit. Again, a lot of the guys are banged up there. The guys that are available or the young guys have had some fumbleitis. And again, you know, Andrew Luck, I think they were saying he only, you know, threw a handful of passes over 15 yards. The body looks good. He looks back. The press conference or the sideline interview that he had during the third preseason game concerned me a little bit. He didn't feel overly confident. There were some weird mannerisms going on. I don't know if he's 100% healthy.
I would kind of echo those same sentiments. And as we always tell folks, once the podcast drops, don't wait till Sunday morning if you want to take three. There's a good chance that number might not actually be available closer to kickoff. And we'll leave it at that to try and get things going in the positive manner when it comes to the National Football League. Payne, I think we've done all right for our first regular season podcast. Of course, we'll resume the normal recording schedule for week two with the Monday podcast. Of course, a double dip as far as Monday Night Football is concerned with Jets-Lions and the nightcap between the Rams and Raiders. We'll be back next Thursday as we start to go through things. But one last time, you want to plug the contest and the promotions and all of that good stuff for our loyal listeners to show our appreciation.
Yeah, absolutely. BetTheBoard.footballcontest.com. Sign up. You'll have until Sunday, but don't wait. I don't want to hear about you not being able to get into the contest because you forgot or you're trying to sign up and enter picks 3 minutes before the game start on Sunday. Sign up now. Go to BetTheBoard.footballcontest.com. Again, $5,000 prize pool, free to join. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a coworker. And the other thing that I told you we were going to be doing is this doesn't go without you guys. So we want to start giving things back to you guys for supporting the podcast, retweeting the podcast, leaving nice reviews in iTunes. I told you this was coming. We're doing it week one. We're going to give out a little swag pack. We put all the reviews into a like simulator kind of thing and up popped a name. Please, in the future, kind of make it a name that is at least usable to say out loud on a podcast. And the one guy... So there are some interesting names in there, but L. Peterson was the winner of the iTunes contest that came out of the simulator. Hit us up, nice free Visa gift card and some Bet the Board swag. So contact us, reach out to us on social media or email us. Just show us a picture of your review and we'll get you sorted there. So congrats to L. Peterson on winning that. And we're going to run these every couple weeks. So we'll pick a winner. So continue leaving the 5-star review. Continue leaving a nice little blurb and sentence. If you do those things, you'll be entered into these pools and have a chance to win when we do it every couple of weeks.
Yeah, and we, like you said, Payne, I mean, we wouldn't do this if it wasn't for the listeners and all that awesome feedback. 5-star reviews. We greatly appreciate you guys not only tuning in, but also spreading the gospel that is Bet the Board. As the sports betting space gets more and more crowded with misinformation, you guys know you can come here for reliable stuff. And while we may not pick every single game on the board, we can say with 100% certainty that every game we give out as our best bet will make our card and will be heavily invested right alongside you. So for Dave Mason, you can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL, Payne Insider. You can follow him there as well. I am Todd Furman, and of course you can follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod for all sorts of announcements, updates, all of that good stuff. Best of luck week one in the National Football League with all your investments, and hopefully come Sunday at about 4:30 Eastern, we'll see all of you guys at the window as we look to cash the Cincinnati Bengals.